Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Monday, November 4, 2013. From Moscow, Ed Snowden filed an appeal for clemency. The response from the top dogs running the intelligence show in Washington, D.C. is no mercy. If you show no mercy. Dianne Feinstein on the Sunday morning political shows gave the word that she does not believe Ed Snowden did a service to our country, and she flatly said, I think the answer is no clemency. And Snowden wrote a pretty powerful and eloquent appeal, saying that he told the truth, he's not a traitor, he didn't sell the information to a foreign government, and that he did a real service for our nation, and I agree with that point of view. Snowden said, instead of causing damage, the usefulness of the new public knowledge for society is now clear because reforms to politics, supervision, and laws are being suggested. Citizens have to fight against the suppression of information about affairs of essential importance for the public. Those who speak the truth are not committing a crime. Now, my senior senator, Dianne Feinstein, who is desperately trying to salvage as much of the illegal and unconstitutional NSA spying as she possibly can, wants to trade the scalp of Ed Snowden and a promise not to spy on foreign leaders in exchange for essentially preserving all of the unconstitutional and extra-legal actions the NSA has been undertaking now for some time. And it amazes me. The San Francisco Chronicle published an op-ed by Feinstein on Sunday where she mirrored these messages without any opposing view. And that same newspaper allowed her to sail to re-election last year without even a polite little recitation of what she did or didn't do in the preceding 6 years in the United States Senate. And so I find it very painful to see what is called a debate. The president says, yeah, we need a conversation about all this. Well, the conversation is loaded, it's one-sided, and the corporate media does not let us hear from the critics who know as much, if not more, as Dianne Feinstein. And so Feinstein's bill, which passed out of the Intelligence Committee with only 4 negative votes last week, which is called a reform bill, actually just, puts more foundation of a legal nature to the spying that's already being conducted, and the phone records in particular. And to its credit, the New York Times, which has often been an apologist for the government, as you know, they delayed their blockbuster revelations about the NSA until well after the 2004 presidential election. Well, they ran a lengthy piece starting on the front page Sunday. Headline, No Morsel is Too Minuscule for the All-Consuming NSA. And in this lengthy piece, they recap some of the disclosures of Ed Snowden, and they add to it. For example, I didn't know about Dish Fire. And Dish Fire was a database program that stores years of text messages from around the world just in case, it says here. The TrackFin collection accumulates gigabytes of credit card purchases. The fellow pretending to send a text message at an internet cafe in Jordan may be using an NSA technique codenamed Polar Breeze to tap into nearby computers. And then there was one of these plots that the NSA says it was able to disrupt because it's been spying on millions of Americans and presumably millions of people all over the world. And, you know, Feinstein does this too, where she first invokes 9/11, and then she talks about the plots that have been busted up by NSA surveillance. And they rarely give us anything meaningful. Here's the latest one. The spy agency stationed in Texas intercepted 478 emails while helping to foil a jihadist plot to kill a Swedish artist who had drawn pictures of the Prophet Muhammad. Now tell me where U.S. national interest is at play. Intercepting emails of a jihadist plot to kill a Swedish artist who had drawn pictures of the Prophet Muhammad. That's a clear example of the mission creep, the overreach of our intelligence agencies. And I want to credit Jason Leopold, the FOIA fanatic, because he's done it again. He got the government to release the talking points of the NSA about the Ed Snowden leaks. And I think 5 of the top 10 talking points all reference 9/11. And go ahead and I'll try to find a link for Jason's article. I don't have it in front of me. But whenever you hear Clapper or Alexander talk, these same talking points and the references of 9/11 in Rudy Giuliani style are always right there. So one of Snowden's comments, it's been replayed over the weekend, is that the two biggest offenders in terms of violating the privacy rights of humans on the planet are the NSA and the British government's equivalent, GCHQ, government communications headquarters. And we know that there are about 50,000 items that Ed Snowden has passed along to Glenn Greenwald and others. And so we have only scratched the surface to date. And there is much more to learn about the labyrinth of American spying operations. Did you know about Spinal Tap? Spinal Tap is the code name for a program they used in Iraq that hackers were able to identify 24 unique IP addresses, identifying computers used by Hezbollah, making it possible to snatch Hezbollah messages from the flood of global communications that are sifted by the NSA. There's also TAP, the Tailored Access Operations. That's actually TAO, pardon me, not TAP, TAO, which is the division that breaks into computers around the world to steal the data inside and sometimes to leave spy software behind. Yes, we're making friends all over the world, no doubt about it. And we've also gotten up close and personal with Venezuela's Ministry of Planning and Finance, monitoring the government and personal emails of the top 10 Venezuelan economic officials. Terrorism? Preventing the next 9/11? It doesn't even remotely fit the talking points that we are fed by the people running these massive spying operations. And Bill Binney, who's one of the NSA whistleblowers, who's been a guest on our program, says that he has no problem with spying on foreign targets like Brazil's president or the German chancellor. He says that's pretty much what every government does. It's the foundation of diplomacy. But he says that without new leadership, new laws, and top-to-bottom reform, the NSA will represent a threat to turnkey totalitarianism, the capability to turn its awesome power, now directed mainly against other countries, on the American public. Binney, I think it's already started to happen. That's what we have to stop. Meanwhile, some scholars in Germany are urging the German government to offer Ed Snowden asylum. His most recent comments have been published in Der Spiegel in Germany. And more than 50 high-profile Germans have called for U.S. intelligence whistleblower Ed Snowden to be offered asylum in their country. Meanwhile, the NSA here on the homeland is cracking down on somebody who assumes that you can crack a joke about the NSA. I guess their slogan over at Fort Meade is, "That's not funny." Because Dan McCall, a Minnesotan who operates LibertyManiacs.com, sells T-shirts with the NSA official seal that read, "The NSA, the only part of government that actually listens." Other parodies say, "Spying on you since 1952, and peeping while you're sleeping." But because he used the official trademark or logo of the NSA, they are issuing a cease and desist order. I guess that's one thing they don't want to listen to. And one more item about the surveillance state in our world. Brazil's government has acknowledged that its top intelligence agency did spy on diplomatic targets from countries including the U.S., Iran, and Russia. And you may say, oh, is this an NSA leak to bring them down a notch for the posturing by Dilma Rousseff, who postponed her state visit to Washington? Well, there's really no comparison. The Brazilian intelligence agency, commonly known as ABIN, did follow some diplomats from Russia and Iran by foot and car, photographing their movements, and they monitored a commercial property leased by the U.S. Embassy in Brasilia, the nation's capital. But Russia's honorary consul in the southern city of Porto Alegre said it's kind of basic stuff when you think about it. Government spy, what a surprise. I've long suspected that my phone line was tapped, and it probably still is. So, these are facts, and you can choose how to interpret them. I always like to take a moment to thank the people who support this program, and over the weekend I went to my post office, Box 100 in Mill Valley, California, and Kate Ann from New York City, who just took out an annual subscription, your bag of Kona coffee and your bonus book, Spying for Democracy, is on the way, Kate Ann. And I thank you very much for your new annual subscription. And Pam in Loomis, California, has signed up for a new monthly subscription. She says, I love your commentaries. I remember you from AM radio in San Francisco. Thank you for being one of the few who actually make sense. Well, thank you, Pam. Your support's very important to me. If you'd like to be like Pam and Kate Ann, go to my website, peterbcollins.com. Follow the links right under my picture that say sign up. You can take out that monthly subscription for $5 and cancel any time. Or the best deal, the annual subscription, $50. And it brings you Kona Coffee and our bonus book. The other way you can support us is by going to GoDaddy.com and steering your web business to them. Right now, if you sign up for web hosting with unlimited storage and bandwidth, the rates start at just $1.99 a month, and you'll get your domain name free. And follow the link in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. For another screaming deal from GoDaddy.com. Today is day 12 of Roger Shuler, journalist in jail in Shelby County, Alabama. And over the weekend, we did see some new coverage. All Alabama, a website, ran an article headlined Truth Teller or Bomb Thrower? Legal Schnauzer Blogger Jailed After Violating Court Order. Now, they got some of the facts correct, but this headline in itself is so offensive. Because you could say, you know, if you're going to be fair and balanced about it, you could ask, is Roger Shuler a truth teller or a smear artist? That would be fair. But there are no bombs in the legal schnauzer arsenal. Roger Shuler used words. He uses words and he uses legal arguments. So right there, from the get-go of that headline, you have biased coverage that then goes on to compress the sequence of events and say that Shuler has written about elected officials recently mixing the credulity of public documents with saucy allegations of marital infidelity and criminality. And then the article says, earlier this month, the state court told him to stop, and he didn't. Well, it's not that simple. Because the state court never heard from Roger Shuler before it issued an injunction and then a contempt citation for which it threw him in jail. And these are just some examples of how the media, in this casual way, reinforces the power of the already powerful in a corrupt court system there in Alabama. And you know, I'll give the writer credit that he or she did at least report on the bare facts and the outline of Roger's plight. But even from people who are generally sympathetic to bloggers and to progressives, I'm finding that there is a combination of silence and a sense of, ooh, I don't want to touch that one. And somebody... And this is an example of how well-funded the people who are smearing Roger Shuler are. Somebody got the URL, rogershuler.com. And I just noticed this over the weekend. It may have been up longer than this. It appears to be very recent. And it is written, you know, badly and purportedly in the voice of Roger Shuler. It uses pictures of him, his booking picture. And it reads, Roger Shuler, Satan's Earthly Emissary. And then it has these blog posts, which, you know, again, are satirical. But one is called Fuck the ASPCA. Another one is called Hail Satan. And on another post on the page, they list the home phone number and the address of Roger and Carol Shuler. And this is obvious in its smear nature. But it's interesting, over the weekend, I was talking to a friend who did a Google search on Roger Shuler legal schnauzer. And a paid search result came up. That means that there is somebody out there who is spending money so that if you Google Roger Shuler and legal schnauzer, it will take you to, oh, say, Legal Schnauzer Exposed. Or to The Other McCain. And I've learned a lot in the last week or so about the network of bloggers associated with the late Andrew Breitbart. And they've been in a pissing contest with a guy named Brett Kimberlin, who I know. I didn't know the nature of this, but Kimberlin actually got a restraining order on a blogger who was repeatedly attacking him. And when Roger Shuler wrote about that, then the Breitbart fans or network came down on Shuler, and because he's now in jail, some of these same people are piling on in a rather bizarre but very obvious way. And despite all of this paid smearing of Roger Shuler that's going on, still most of the people who write about his legal situation acknowledge that it's completely unconstitutional, it's unjust, and it shouldn't stand. We'll keep you posted on further developments in the case of Roger Shuler, the journalist in jail. One of the people that we've featured on this program is a psychologist and part-time journalist named Jeffrey Kay. He's based here on the West Coast. And he has focused on the ethical challenges to medical professionals who participated in our government's torture programs, which are presumably all in the past, but frankly, we don't know. And we have a new report from the Task Force on Preserving Medical Professionalism in National Security Detention Centers. The name of the group is way too long. But they have concluded that after 9/11, health professionals working with the military and intelligence services designed and participated in cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment and torture of detainees. Medical professionals were in effect told that their ethical mantra, first, do no harm, didn't apply because they weren't treating people who were ill. What a loophole that is. I mean, you have to be disingenuous and in denial to use that loophole. The report lays blame on the Defense Department and the CIA, which required healthcare staff to put aside any scruples in the interest of intelligence gathering and security practices that cause severe harm to detainees from waterboarding to sleep deprivation and forced feeding. They rename medical people as safety officers rather than doctors and required them to participate in force feeding of prisoners on hunger strike against the rules of the World Medical Association and the AMA. Doctors and psychologists working for the DOD were required to breach patient confidentiality and share what they knew of the prisoner's physical and psychological condition with interrogators, and were used as interrogators themselves. And this is simply another blight, another scourge on the reputation of professionals in the United States who were compromised by the so-called war on terror. And is it over? Is it in the past? The task force says that unethical practices by medical personnel required by the military continue today. The Department of Defense continues to follow policies that undermine standards of professional conduct for interrogation, hunger strikes, and reporting abuse. So it does appear that we're no longer waterboarding people, but we still play fast and loose with treaty obligations and ethical standards. There's a very interesting struggle between two female Democratic members of the United States Senate. And I side with New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Her bill, related to rape in the military, which is opposed by top Pentagon leaders, would take sexual assault cases outside the military chain of command and give military prosecutors, rather than the accuser's commanders, the power to decide which cases to try. This is a very clear and much-needed reform. We cannot trust the military justice system, which ultimately reports to commanders, to honor the rights of victims, female and male, of sexual assault in the military, because their first inclination is to cover it up. And that's what they do on a regular basis. Now, opposing Senator Gillibrand, or Gillibrand, I'm not sure quite how she says it, is Claire McCaskill, the senator from Missouri, more conservative. And she's carrying water for Senator Carl Levin, the Michigan Democrat who will be retiring at the end of this term. And I think that's interesting because Levin authored this bill, which doesn't go as far as Gillibrand's, and it essentially does let commanders keep control of court-martial proceedings. They can overrule them. They can not pursue them. There are many options available to a commander who doesn't take this issue seriously or who prefers to protect an offender. And so I encourage you to speak up. Gillibrand is running a war room on this bill, and she needs a handful of additional votes in the Senate to pass her measure, about 10, I believe. There are 30 undecided senators on this issue, so I encourage you to lean on your U.S. senator to do the right thing in this case. SAC Capital, owned by Stephen A. Cohen, has broken down a barrier. The first Wall Street firm to actually plead guilty to insider trading violations and pay a record $1.2 billion penalty. Now, you've heard before how the Securities and Exchange Commission will crack down on a corporation. Then the corporation pays a fine but doesn't admit any wrongdoing. That's the common way that white-collar crime is dealt with. But SAC took the guilty plea. They're paying the fine. Apparently, Cohen himself has to pay the $1.2 billion on top of $600 million they've already paid. There's a five-year probation on the fund, and they require SAC to terminate its business of managing money for outside investors. Six of eight SAC traders who have been accused have either pled guilty or been convicted. Two others are fighting their indictments. Cohen says he didn't know anything about this. He deplores it. He's a victim of a witch hunt, blah, blah, blah. But we've never seen any high-ranking officials even investigated, much less indicted or convicted, for the obvious crimes that have occurred on Wall Street in the last few years. A few more items before I wrap up here. Abortion is now very difficult to get in the state of Texas. There are thousands of women who will suffer because of the legal struggle that is going on between holier-than-thou forces led by Rick Perry and working women who will be denied access to abortions. The appeals court in New Orleans on Thursday overruled the trial court judge and allowed enforcement of the new restrictions in Texas to go into effect. The most onerous one is that an abortion doctor has to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of the clinic. And they've made virtually impossible for public hospitals to engage in those kinds of agreements. And it's just one example of the return to the gruesome back alley coat hanger abortions of the past. It's really sad. And I repeat what you've heard me say before, where are the liberals? Where are the Democrats? Where are the pro-choice activists? They're not fighting back in Texas right now, and I deplore that. There was another court decision on Friday, a federal court in the case of Ghilardi versus the Department of Health and Human Services, gave a partial victory to those who say that the religious values of the owner of a company can permit that person to say, I'm not going to pay for contraception in the health insurance benefits that my employees earn. And I think it's just flat wrong. Because if you operate a secular company, you can't impose your religious views on people who work for you. And that's what you're doing. But the court says the owners have a right to be free of things that conflict with their religious values. And the decision was written by Judge Janice Rogers Brown, formerly of the California Supreme Court, who was appointed to the appeals bench by George W. Bush. Now, one thing I was glad to see is that the court did not extend this ruling to the corporations owned by these individuals. And if they did, they would be extending the corporate personhood to the point where they're suggesting that a corporation can have a faith. A corporation can practice a faith. This is all so bizarre. Now, the court, as I said, didn't go that far. They said, no, you know, we can't approve that claim for a corporation. But the fact that they will allow the individuals who own a company to dictate their morality or religiosity to the people who work for them, that's a really frightening prospect. You may wonder how politics in this nation, right down to the local level, has shifted so dramatically in recent years, and how these limits on contraception and abortion rights are coming, they're trickling up, they're gurgling up from the ground level. Well, part of it has to do with Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers-funded political group. They're now involved in the local city council elections in Coralville, Iowa. Population under 20,000. Americans for Prosperity volunteers are dropping leaflets and other materials provided by the money of the Koch brothers. They're involved in local issues related to property taxes and other tax increases. They say that's what moves them to get involved at the local level. And it's interesting because Chris Turner, a first-time candidate for the city council in Coralville, Iowa, says although he disagrees with Americans for Prosperity on most issues, he actually does agree with them about the local tax issues. And he said, every time I go to a debate or anything, I've tried talking about the budget, and then they just go, Koch brothers, Koch brothers, Koch brothers. He said of his critics, adding that he wished Americans for Prosperity would just go away. Like you, Chris, I wish Americans for Prosperity and the Koch brothers would just go away. Hey, thanks for listening to my news and comment. I appreciate your feedback. Humble host at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.